Well, let's talk a little bit more about this and see whether the return of LNER perhaps begs the question as to whether privatisation has failed. Well, let's put that to Bruce Williamson from the campaign group Rail Future. Bruce, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So let's ask that simple question first. In your view, has rail privatisation failed?
I wouldn't say it's failed, but it's debatable whether it's actually delivered. I mean, obviously, you know, we have a privatised railway. It works. And, you know, the trains are running. We've also had a nationalised railway, not just, you know, going back to British Rail. But, of course, East Coast has failed as a franchise three times now. And so, you know, the operator of last resort has taken over. And the last time it was in state hands, it seemed to work pretty well. So, those sort of arguments, I think, you know, are one of the reasons why nationalisation is actually very popular with the general public. They perceive the rail companies as ripping them off, making a massive profit, and, you know, which isn't entirely fair, because the train operating companies under privatisation are micromanaged by the Department for Transport. So under a nationalised railway, you'd still have the same trains and the government setting the price for tickets and so on. So nationalisation isn't any sort of magic bullet and probably wouldn't change things very much.
Isn't part of the problem here that the bidding process that the government has put in place is so appallingly difficult and complicated that it's very difficult for people to work out whether or not they're going to make any money? And as a result, it means that they either completely overshoot or undershoot, and they're either making too much profit or not enough.
Yeah, I think that is a fair point. You know, the bidding process is actually very expensive. You know, it runs to millions of pounds to put a franchise bid together, and clearly they get it wrong sometimes. It could also be argued that the Department for Transport are guilty here as well, because they're accepting these bids, they're scrutinising these bids, and they're sort of failing to realise, I think, that on some occasion the bidders have obviously got greedy or unrealistic, and the bids have failed. Obviously, Network Rail is a factor here as well, because part of the, if you like, the economic forecast that a bidder would go for is based on improvements to the infrastructure, which is Network Rail's department. Of course, there's no guarantee that Network Rail are going to deliver on time, and that is one of the reasons, not the only reason, but one of the reasons why the Virgin franchise failed.
Now, I've got a bit of an issue here, because as I look at it, I try and think the current status quo, in my opinion, is not good enough, particularly the mess that we've seen in Southern Railway, and certainly until a year ago when I had a board position on a company, and very often I was speaking to staff and they were just saying, look, getting into work, it's impossible. This is why we're late. We can't rely on it. It makes it very difficult for us to stay late and go to events or otherwise, because we can't rely on whether or not we're going to be able to get home, etc., 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 which to me seems basic. It's like the whole KFC debate. If you're there as a rail company, you've got one thing to do, which is to run railways. KFC had one thing to do, and that was to provide chicken. I mean, it really, the clue is in the name. Mm-hmm. So what I've got a problem with, though, is that British Rail, if I go back in my memory into British Rail, they were an abomination of a company, in the sense that because there was no pressure on them to perform, the reliability wasn't good, the train quality and innovation wasn't very good, the investment by government wasn't very good, the morale of staff and their ability to just walk out was quite high, the tickets, there was no commercialisation, so it was just hugely complicated, the stations were a sort of horrible mess. At least under privatisation, we've seen an improvement in some aspects of those things, and I think some people have glamorised how great British Rail was. Am I being unfair?
I think you are, actually. I mean, obviously there is a case of sort of rose-tinted spectacles, you know, or not really, in the eyes of some people. But British Rail, shock horror, was actually very efficient in terms of the sort of cost per passenger mile moved. It did a better job than some of the European counterparts. But the problem was and this really is the sort of key to all of Britain's railway woes, British Rail was starved of funds for decades. You know, it did a very good job of running a railway on a shoestring budget.
And that I think, though, is the issue in the history of Britain and its infrastructure. And I don't understand why we've, I mean, you know, here we are on the day that we've got a vote on Heathrow third runway, where for somehow some people seem to stick their oar in and say, oh, no, we definitely don't want it. And this is terrible and blah, blah, blah. You know, when Paris has got four and Schiphol in Holland, they've got six runways, you know, and we've got two for one of the busiest airports in the world. I really don't understand. And similarly, it took us 40 years to get the M25. It took us 40 years to get the North and South Circulars. We didn't even get those right. They're not even wide enough. The roads up and around the country are a total state. We do not invest properly in our infrastructure. Similarly with our rails. I don't actually mind who owns it. I just want it to be efficient and to be well invested. And at the moment, whilst we do have some nice trains, not many, and I think Virgin brought some quite interesting innovations, particularly on the sort of West Coast side of things as opposed to the East Coast. But still, I think because of the bidding process, we've taken too much money out and we haven't allowed people to invest in a service that really could shine.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, obviously things like, I mean, the interesting thing, of course, is that, you know, airport expansion and road building are very controversial, but rail investment isn't. You know, do people want better trains? Almost universally, yes. But the part of the problem, I think, is down to the electoral cycle, because, of course, railway investment, you know, pays off in the very long term, and obviously in the next 4 or 5 years, you're probably not going to see the return on that. So governments are sort of too short-sighted in that regard. Yeah, and, you know, again, I repeat, sort of decades of underinvestment is led to the situation that we're in now. And we're playing catch-up, actually, and so it's going to take a very long time. Even though there is very welcome investment happening, it's going to take a very long time until we sort of, you know, get the fantasy railway that we want.
Right. Right, I'm going to make you a transport minister for a moment here, Bruce, if you wouldn't mind. So, and because we're up against it time-wise, can I just have your three key policies that you're going to put forward as Minister for Rail in our new government?
Okay. Stability, long-term investment is number one. Number two is electrification. Let's get electrification up and running again. We've got one of the lowest levels of electrification in Europe. And number three, let's stop racking up ticket prices above inflation. Let's adopt CPI as our measure of as our benchmark for ticket pricing.
There we go. We have our policies in place. Bruce Williamson from the campaign group Rail Future, thank you very much indeed for joining me this morning here on Talk Radio, where, of course, we look at this first state-run East Coast Line train.